Hey everyone, welcome to this week's Going in Circles Big Monday show. We are going to talk about, well, what else? The Derby preps from the last weekend. We had, I guess they were not any real big upsets. The Bluegrass certainly wasn't an upset. The Santa Anita Derby looked like a two-horse race, and it was. And Resilience was very resilient in the wood. So the field is semi-set for the Derby. Field for the Oaks is semi-set as well. We'll talk about that. And get Barry's impressions on opening weekend at Keeneland. And we'll go from there. See you in a minute.
Hello.
Derby, hey, Barry. What's up?
What's happening, my man?
Not very much for Monday, although it was very interesting Monday.
Interesting Monday.
Meme-wise, it was off the charts. Like,
yeah, well, every 20 years we have an eclipse and
everybody
freaks out.
Yeah, the memes were outstanding all day.
Yeah, I rung in the eclipse at the harness track.
In the dark?
It didn't even barely get dark. I don't get it, man. It just, to me, is like, I just don't understand the people's, people that got crazy over it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's unique because it doesn't happen often, but
yeah,
I guess that's the only thing about it. But
I guess it just seems like things these days get like they grow in stature, and it's sometimes difficult to figure out why. I mean, I don't know. There was a lot of people on the roads going north, and then afterwards, there's a lot of people on the road going south. And it's just not. I don't know. Maybe I'm just. I was 2017. We had one in Florida. I guess it wasn't a total eclipse, but
yeah, it was.
It got a little dark.
Yeah, it wasn't as dark as what I saw on TV today in some places, but.
Yeah, it's not fun like a hurricane.
No, hurricane parties are unmatched.
That's right. But no, we made it through. They actually had a delay. It was like a 40-minute delay for the.
That's harness. A long time.
Yeah, especially considering that they have lights. I don't know.
Yeah, what was up with that? They didn't want to turn them on for a few minutes.
They did. They did turn them on.
Oh, so what is the problem?
I have no idea. I guess they just wanted all the patrons to be able to go outside and see the moon cross in front of the sun.
All right. Good times.
Yeah. We made it. Like Y2K.
Oh, I remember that. That was wild.
People forget like how nuts it was leading up to it. People thought that
the media hyped it up,
though. Yeah, airplanes would drop out of the sky and computers are reset and everybody's bank accounts will get wiped out.
Right, everybody turns to zero. Everything's gonna reset.
Yeah, it was like everything was gonna be screwed up and basically nothing happened.
Not one thing went wrong.
Nope. it's no big deal. Kind of like Triple Crown preps. You know, they're basically over.
They're done.
And I have to say, this was a looking back at the Triple Crown prep season, it seems like a very unfulfilling journey so far in that. When I look at the Derby, I see like four horses that legitimately have a shot to win. And then there's like a couple more that might like rich strike it, just be right horse at the
right,
right time.
Place at the right time if things go their way. Yeah.
And then there's like everyone else, and
everybody else is bad.
This might be the worst derby field that I've seen.
Didn't we say that last year?
Yeah, and it's even worse.
I know.
I mean, the favorites are a horse that, you know, is spectacular when he's on, but he's not always on, and a horse that comes from last. So, I mean, that's just a... It seems like it's a recipe for...
Somebody else, but...
Some kind of, you know, scratching your head afterwards. Which is fine, and like, you know what, if you're looking from a betting standpoint, the favorite's not winning is probably, you know, gives the opportunity. It's the one race of the year where you don't have to worry about, like, CAW money, really. There's so much bet into the race that there's just so many overlays. And I think you have to... I saw a quote today from... Mike Mahoney about the Derby, and you know, the gist of it was like, you'll see a horse that's a really good horse that's sitting there at like 6-1, and normally every other race that you would consider betting on throughout the year, you would say, hey, this is a good horse, 6-1 is an overlay, and you would lay into them,
lay it in.
But in the Derby there might be three of them like that, and there's still so many variables that it's just a completely, you know, because of the field size, because of the crowd, because of all the variables that you just can't take into consideration. And you look at Sierra Leone, you know, he didn't load, and it took a while. And he wasn't like, you know, trying to flip or anything crazy, but he was pretty adamant about not getting in there. And you know, the excuse was given that it was the crowd, which is a completely viable excuse. However,
the crowd on Derby Day is twice that.
Yeah, the crowd is everywhere on Derby Day, and there's no hiding from it. And even though they're kind of tucked away down there in that corner, it's still there's a lot of opportunities for things to happen. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of you know, helicopters in the air. I'm sure they'll have drones. It's just, it's a variable that you don't, you can't really account for, because you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, nobody, I don't recall him being much trouble in any of his other races. He's only have, you know, three of them.
Three.
But... But it's, I don't recall him having any trouble going in the gate, and I don't recall hearing about anybody saying that he might balk. And it's just one of those things that happens, and then you're like, okay, well,
that was this time.
Yeah.
What's he going to do the next time?
What if he draws post two?
Oof. I mean, he's hanging out in the gate.
Yeah. Well, what if he's in post two and you know, he won't go in? And, you know, I mean, that disturbs everyone else. So it's not just him. It's what does that do to, maybe what's that do to a horse like Fierceness, who isn't a great gate horse?
He'll fall asleep in there, man.
Fall asleep or has to circle for, you know, 5 extra minutes. And it's just, like I said, man. The variable of 20 horses or 19 horses, you're going to have a couple horses coming from other countries. And yeah, they're going to school in the gate and do all that stuff before, but it's completely different. It's a completely different animal on race day. You can't, there's no way to simulate that. So it'll be interesting, because there's a lot of pretenders in this Derby, a lot of them. And God knows, maybe one of them will clunk up and win.
Right. You know, some nonsense happens during the race, you know, it's inevitable. Somebody's going to get stopped in the wrong spot and lose all chance, things like that. And, but it's just, the way it's described and the way how you describe it. And it's like, it's remarkable how consistent the venture is. Usually the public kind of gets it right with favorites most of the time.
Yeah. Well, they get they've gotten
at the least favorites, the horses to beat. I mean,
they've gotten the favorites right in a lot of the Derby preps on top, but then behind them has just been
chaos.
Yeah. Society, man.
Society, man.
Our guy Mutt, man, he kind of like tried to tout Society Man a little bit. And I Did said he? To him afterwards, I said, you know what? I'm happy I didn't say, like, what are you, stupid?
What are you, nuts?
What are you, crazy? I said, I think he might be more of a one-turn horse than a two-turn horse, but that's really all I said. So at least I don't feel bad because I talked you off of it, Because we both liked Brazilians. And, and that was kind of a
default process, like,
of elimination,
right? Attrition. Well,
is there to use in that race?
Nobody. There was nobody else that was even as fast as those. There was like three horses, and then Deterministic was one of them, but that horse we knew probably wasn't going to get the distance.
Yep,
I think everybody should have known that. I was shocked that horse went off favored. By that much.
It was just kind of a situation where people believe the hype. And I mean, for us, we look at it and we're like, we're a lot more critical of things.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, it's like we've talked about so many times about society almost. And the people want to see great things. They want to see greatness. They want to see things that never happened before. So sometimes these horses get built up as though they're, better than they really are.
Mm.
And performances get trumped up because, he did this, he did that. Well, a lot of times, the figs don't come back good. And one other thing about speed figures, are a tool. They're not the end all. I would much rather win a bunch of races with slow speed figures than get the moral victory of having the best number but running fourth. But in the end, it's more likely that if you run fast, you're going to be better than if you run slow. And there's a lot of horses here that haven't run fast. And that's the thing that you just say to yourself. The gap between the top horses and the rest of the horses is not that great, except when Fierceness runs a freak race. he's shown that he's got the ability to jump out there. And if he doesn't get impeded, if he's free running, he can just destroy a field. And that is, he's literally the only horse in this group that's shown that ability. That doesn't mean he's going to win, but I really thought it was kind of odd that most of last week, everybody spent shitting on him because he won by so much. Oh, he's not going to get that trip. He's not going to get a trip. Everybody was saying that before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, too. Oh, he's a fraud, blah, blah, blah. I mean...
Yeah, I remember that, because I was like, well, you throw out that one race, he's faster than everybody else.
And that's the thing. It's like, we're not just jumping on the, this is kind of a suspect group of three-year-olds trained lately. This is something we've been saying since last fall, because I remember handicapping the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and saying to myself, like, who has the ability, if they run their A race, to really dominate this race? And the only horse I came up with was him. And when he was sitting there at 8-1 in that race,
I was like,
I said, you know what? I'm not gonna
not even mess around with
this. I'm not betting doubles. I'm not betting exactas. I'm not betting
anything. I'm betting them to win, and I'll take the price. And I mean, it was one of the fortunate wagers I made last fall. But yeah, it was just a situation where, you know, you look through it, everybody's got holes. I put in the Going in Circles Digest on Saturday, Sierra Leone is much slower than Zandon. Much slower at this point. I don't know what number he ran the other day. It was probably pretty good. But
what, like a three or four?
He was running fours and fives. Four and three quarters and fives. Zandon was running twos. Now, different horses, different crops. You know, the horses in 2024 aren't racing against the horses that raced in 2022. But Zandon was getting beaten, and he ran those kind of numbers. And, you know, his biggest problem seemed to be that he just didn't like to win, Zandon.
He didn't want to finish.
But to me, Sierra Leone is basically a trumped-up Zandon. And all this, you know, all the plaudits, we didn't get to the bottom of him, blah, 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 blah. Come on. None of that matters. It's all nonsense. In the end, the horses, if you watch that race, you can't tell me that horse wasn't being asked for everything he had at around the 3/8 pole, because he had a lot to do at that point. Yeah. So the idea that he won it easily, not really. The horse has got holes, man. Can he win? Absolutely. But he's shown a lugging issue. Well, yeah, I didn't even get to that. But I was going to say, he's shown an issue at the gate. He doesn't get away from there well, and he requires pace, which I'm sure he'll get, but he also requires a semi-clean trip. You can get in a little bit of trouble and still win, but you can't get in a lot of trouble. And sometimes another horse will run into you has nothing to do with you. Just like when you're driving down the road and somebody rear-ends you, you know? It doesn't mean you're a bad driver. This means they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And in a 20-horse field,
there's a lot of that going on.
and my take, too, is that it's a 20-horse field with a lot of horses I don't think want to go a mile and a quarter. And
right. Horses falling down is a problem.
The chance at the top of the stretch for 10 of them to be, like, in retreat. And, you know, horses, when they get tired, they start to lug in or lug out. And that's when closers wind up having to take up or having to steady or, you know, getting bumped. And it's why betting closers is difficult, especially at short prices. And again, the horse looks like the distance won't be an issue. He certainly is a quality horse, but
no cinch.
Well, these people that are acting like, you know,
Flightline Junior.
Yeah, it's a totally different, you know, it's just a totally different thing. Put it this way, I would much rather have my chance, put my chances on a horse that needs to stay in the clear but has speed and going to be up front than a dead closer. Just as it's a tough thing to do, man. But you know, we got a non-Baffert Santa Anita Derby winner, which is not something we see a whole time.
I wasn't expecting that, honestly.
I mean, to me, it was just a two-horse race. It was right. One of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Frankie Dettor used up all his good luck.
In the seventh.
Couldn't get that seventh. Couldn't. Lafitte Pink Eye still
the king.
Still a top. Tough record to break. I mean, I don't have much feeling about that race other than, you know, the two best horses ran 1-2.
Ran the best, right, yeah.
And everybody else was kind of a pretender, and they all ran like that. And if that race is a grade one next year, the Greatest Stakes Committee should just slap themselves in the face. They should all walk around and just slapping each other in the face.
No, but it is true. As funny as it is true, because
EJ freaking won the cup, finished third. He's worse than what was my horse that I was making fun of that one year?
So many.
With the Doug O'Neill horse, remember?
Oh man.
He finished third twice. He got beat like 30 lengths.
Stiletto Boy? No.
Can't remember his name. No, not Stiletto Boy. We didn't make fun of him till he was older. Can't believe I can't remember this.
Oh, that's
he came to Kentucky. Remember, he came to Kentucky and then he like won an allowance race. Like Ellis Park that summer.
Yes, I remember. Oh man, I forget the name of the horse.
Yeah, this is what happens when you get old.
For real, bro.
The Alzheimer's kicks in.
Totally forgot.
And you know, that's the type of thing you recall at like 2 o'clock
midnight.
Yeah.
And beyond.
Can I remember? Happy Jack.
Happy Jack. Happy Jacks. Yeah.
Yeah. Applejack.
That's right. Applejack. Applejack.
That was my quote of the year that year.
Moniker. Yeah. Applejack. So
Applejack, yes. Finishes. You're using Applejack's third place finishes to somehow justify the strength of the race when it should be used to degrade the race.
Remember the Messier race?
Yeah, the Messier. He was third in the Messier race. He got beat 30 lengths and he finished third. Messier, who still has never won. My prediction. My jinx. I put my jinx on him.
The hex.
The Naira stewards had to get involved to keep it going. Unwarranted, by the way. The horse should have stayed up.
Oh my God, yes. They should have stayed
he really didn't do anything.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But in the end,
fast. He's like,
my now 26-month claim is still alive. He'll never win another race. Messier. I don't know why they don't run that horse in the turf.
At least try it. Jeez, I mean.
One time, I think. Only one time. And I think it was a turf sprint, like a 7-ace at Woodbine.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, it was.
He was like flying at the end, but they. I was nervous. I said, shit, they figured it out. But, of course, right back to the dirt. believe me, the water's going to get deeper. I don't know if he's going back to Woodbine or not. Dutro's got him, but that wasn't exactly an all-star ensemble he was facing the other day.
Ensemble.
Yeah. That was Linda Rice Day. It was Jacobson Day.
Jacobson Day, right? Yeah. He won 5, right?
Yeah, yeah. They alternate. the things that happen in racing these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, going back to resilience, I mean, he was just... He was the process of elimination. I liked his race in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I liked him in New Orleans. And I remember saying and writing this down that if he drew in an inside post, I would like him. But the outside posts there, it's tough to get over if you don't like have a ton of speed. And he wound up, leaving out and got hung a little bit wide the first turn, and then hung wide in the second turn. Not like terrible, but like 3 wide,
Right.
And it was his first time against real horses, and not maidens, and he hung in there well. He just got tired of left.
Didn't we talk about him? We talked about him on here.
Yep. The last 50 yards, he got a little bit tired, and it set him up good, and Mott did the right thing. He found the weak
softer spot.
Weak spot. He drew the rail, which helped a lot. And Johnny V, the rail was good at Aqueduct on Sunday. And Johnny V did a good job. And it was just kind of like Like Mudd had said, he goes, "Hey, do you want to like do a horse by horse, you know, thing with me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure," because that's I'm gonna do my Going in Circles Digest rundown. And I said, "I'm gonna be like negative Nelly because like 11 of them have negative comments." You know, so like. I think the most optimistic thing I could say is, well, I'd like Uncle Heavy if he wasn't post 13, but he is. and I don't just like him because I can relate to his name.
He's just not that caliber.
Yeah, I don't like layoff horses in these races. It just doesn't work very often. That horse of McPeak's that hadn't run since January. I think there's a real truth to the fact that if you cannot stand up to racing once a month in the early part of your three-year-old year, you're not going to win the Kentucky Derby.
Right.
You're just not going to win. And, I mean, now we see Hades is going to run in the Lexington. And they made a huge error passing on the Fountain of Youth. There was no reason to pass on it. And they're going to tell you, oh, well, he hadn't recovered, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't matter. That's the whole thing is you only get one chance at these races. You do not have to be really good to win a $400,000 grade two race. That's the situation not running it. Where you I would need run. To be racing. Right. Because once you get past these preps, all of the three-year-old races for that kind of money are really, really hard. So, like, what are people doing passing on those horses? I get Chad Brown's going to run his horses every 2 months, and that's the way he's going to do it because that's just what he does. And he's had a lot of success doing it. And it works great with turf horses. And it's just, you know, but when you have a horse who really wasn't expected to be this type of horse, and then you get a fortunate trip to win, and yeah, you can make the case that the Fountain of Youth fell apart like during the day of the Fountain of Youth.
Right, not totally in the race.
So yeah, it as it turns out, it was a much softer spot, and had that been the field, they might have changed their mind, but you have to be in it to win it. And if you really intend on getting to the Derby, you have to have enough points. And Andy Serling was saying something, and Marcus Hirsch was saying something, and this was more along the line of the Oaks. And you know what? They're wrong. They're wrong. I don't want to hear this bullshit about, oh, well, we want the best horses in the race. You know what? These are races you must qualify for. If you cannot make the qualifying races and you cannot earn enough points because of whatever reason, weather, bad luck, this, that, the other thing, too bad. There's no situation where a horse that has one race in 5 or 6 months should be favored over horses that have been racing. Because those horses are earning their way in. And what are we really talking about? You know how many stake wins Ways and Means has?
Zero.
Zero. She's a zero-time stake winner. Oh, she's good. Yeah, no doubt. But this is the, you know, this is the thing that these days that we get this undercurrent of, oh, well, we should have the best horse. Well, you know what you should do? Run your horse. If the horse is physically not able to make it in time to do that, well, you know what? What should we do? Move the race? Move it to June? Maybe make it July? In the history of horse racing, lots of horses have missed big races. The Kentucky Oaks is not the Kentucky Derby. It's a big race. Nobody sits up and says, man, the race I want to win is the Kentucky Oaks. And it's a normal race, and there's 14 spots available. 14. And there's no Japanese horse that's coming to take a spot. There's no European horse to come to take a spot. if you can't be one of the first 14, I don't know. I'm not for that at all. And as it turns out, Ways and Means is probably going to get out anyways. But like Candide, fact of the matter was that they chose to run her in that race, knowing what her racing style is, knowing that Keeneland potentially might be a speed favoring track at that point. I mean, is it a shock that the Keeneland favors speed, even though every two turn race was won by a horse that wasn't a speed horse?
Yeah.
But is it unfortunate? Is she one of the best 14 fillies? Sure.
Probably. Yeah.
But she's run once since the Breeders' Cup and she, you know, got a little bit lost. And does it suck for the people? Yeah, sure. But the fact is that it would suck for somebody who is, you know, had earned her way in, and they're gonna tell them, oh no, you can't get in because this other filly's gonna get in. We should not be helping Todd Pletcher and Chad Brown. It's the truth. It's the truth. They don't need help. If they can't get them to qualify in these races, then you know what? Too bad. There's lots of other races. I mean, this business suffers greatly from people not running horses.
Yeah, it's evident, especially on, you know, big race days.
I just don't have any. The last thing we need, because Marcus had said something is about a committee. The last thing we need is a committee, man.
Yeah.
Because the committees that racing comes up with,
typically absurd in some way.
Very good word. Just look at the greatest stakes stuff. And I feel bad for some of them. No, I don't feel bad for, I shouldn't say that. But I understand the position of some of the people on the Greatest Stakes Committee. They shouldn't be on it. If you work for a track, you should not be on that.
I don't know how they didn't see that in the beginning.
It's baffling. Well, you know what? Like, when you go back 30 years, it was a different era. It was a different game. We didn't have access to see all of the races on all of the circuits like we do now.
Mm. Yeah.
If you were in California, you saw all your races, but you didn't see much of the other races. Maybe you saw a replay here or there, but you weren't even getting PPs for the races. Now, hell, you got them a week out for everywhere. Every track you want, they probably got PP somewhere for that Kazakhstan place, that horse over in Dubai.
Yeah.
But these days, you don't need to have racing secretaries. There's lots of people that can help you that would be third parties that could do a much better job than a racing secretary, because a racing secretary's primary goal is to write races for his own racetrack. And that's what they do. They don't follow racing in other jurisdictions nearly as close as they follow it in their own. And you put them in a position where, you know, put it this way, if you owned a racetrack and you sent me to the Greatest Stakes Committee and we got like five of our races downgraded and one upgraded, you'd probably be pissed off at me, right? Well, next year when I went back there, I'd be lobbying like hell. I'd be wanting to fight people if they wanted to downgrade our races, because I'm going to say, man, that's a bad reflection on me. It's such a racing thing, though. We put people in positions to have conflicted interests, and then we look the other way and pretend, oh, yeah, but you know, they wouldn't do that. when all evidence is that no, that they would.
They're doing it.
I mean, the conflict of interest that exists in horse racing, it
really can't get away from any of it.
It's so bad nowadays.
It's like a big ball of Clark Griswold's Christmas lights.
It just is.
Tangled.
You go in the paddock for one of these graded stakes at Keeneland, and almost everybody's got some sort of relationship, some sort of business relationship with everybody else. Whether they own the stallions, whether they got mares, whether they have foal shares, whether they sell horses with them, whether the trainers train for three or four different people, whether the jockeys are related. I mean, there's so many potential conflicts of interest that it's not even, I mean, it gets to be where for us, we don't even pay much attention to it anymore because it's so prevalent.
Right. It's like they're all related in some way, shape, or form.
Like stewards. Should stewards work for the racetracks? No.
Definitely not.
Of course not. But do they? Yes.
Yes.
Someone was telling me once, oh, you know, they have a state steward. I said, yeah, one. And in California, I think they're all work for the state. I mean, it's not perfect because the California stewards stink. But they would stink no matter who they worked for. But there are situations where, you know, DQing a horse or not DQing a horse has ramifications financially for the racetrack. You know, have you a big carryover day? And there's a, you know, you have a big carryover day and you have a Saturday coming up and it's Thursday and somebody hits the thing and there's an inquiry. And I mean, I'm not saying that they call up and tell them, I'll definitely take that down. But you see enough bad calls, you wonder.
Very true.
And for the 4,000th time, perception is reality. It is reality, whether we like it or not. What people think is what they think. And think about all the stupid things that people think that we know are 100% wrong, yet you can almost not convince them of that.
These days, a lot.
So, do you have any other thoughts on the weekend's festivities?
No, I mean, you know, a few things stood out, like Frankie winning all those races. That was pretty cool. And costly for me, but that's all right. Opening weekend, Keeneland was decent.
Seemed like the weather was a little cool, but
cold, yeah,
clear,
chilly.
Didn't rain, though. This week coming up, it appears like rain is imminent.
Yeah, I mean, it should be getting kind of quiet for the next couple of weeks before the Derby.
Well, we get to Lexington this weekend.
Yeah, but realistically,
yeah, it's not going to actually have anything to do with the Derby. Right.
Not like it used to, you know.
No.
I mean, weren't we talking about this like before with the Derby trial? It was like a week before the Derby.
I think at one point the Derby trial was like 5 days before the Derby.
Yeah.
The Derby trial, which is now called the Pat Day Mile. You want to you will not be able to win the Derby trial in the Derby anymore. Unless you're gonna race in heats. The Pat de Mal is kind of interesting. I hope that they don't run deterministic in the Kentucky Derby, because it's just a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
And provided that he comes out of the race fine, you would think that a cutback to the wood would be something that would make a lot of sense. Though I could also get the feeling, not having read a word or heard a word about anything, that they might just kind of wait and run him back in the Woody Stevens on Belmont Day, which seems like a million, you know, miles from now, but it's
really not that far away.
2 months away, you know. These days, the guys are perfectly willing to run horses every 2 months, so I just have a hunch that might happen, because he didn't run good at all the other day. He really just didn't have any punch. I would be surprised if they ran him back in the Derby, but, you know, you never know. What's the saying that got everybody all wild with last year? Steve, remember our guy Steve, like, freaked out? Well, it said, just because you earn the points to run in the Derby doesn't mean you should actually run.
He's like, what? He lost his mind.
Yeah, he completely didn't know what lost hit his him. Mind. like I was taking a live what? Powerball ticket and ripping it up. It's a chance of a lifetime. Okay, buddy.
Yeah, he was hype over that one.
Yeah. There's guys that have 37 horses nominated to the race every year. Pretty sure that the it's not really the chance of a lifetime. It's the same chance every single year for them. So
they'll be okay.
Yeah. Hey, all I have to say is, and this is like the easiest way to prove anything, and everybody always shuts up. Oh, yeah. Go back through last year's Derby field and see where everybody is now.
Right.
Exactly. I get it, man. People want to run in a race. It's a big thing. It's no one ever. People ask me when they found out I was a horse trainer. They asked me one of two things. Are the races all fixed? Or have you ever won the Kentucky Derby? Those were the two questions that invariably everyone asked. No one ever asked me if I won the Preakness. No one ever asked me.
No way.
The Travers. I did have people. Now this kind of, you know, makes the situation a little more sobering. I have had people ask me if I rode the horses. That has happened more than once. And I just kind of
would you
said,
say?
No, I do not ride horses. Horses and me are not, we're not compatible.
We're not pals on that level.
We're not compatible in that manner. I did ride my ex-wife's pony once, Hank.
Hank.
Yeah. And then she screamed at me for riding because
Hank's old.
I think she might have called me names. Plus, she knew that I really didn't know how to ride very well. So, but
that was it. That was the end of your jockey career.
This is a story I hate to tell, but I'm gonna tell you anyways. When I first started training, I started with, you know, Ken Ramsey, and he told me that he would buy me a pony if I wanted a pony. Trainers should have a pony. So, okay, you're right. You should have a pony. So, Max Hodge from Fazek Tipton, he's a big wig now. He's a suit over Fazek Tipton now. Mm-hmm. And you'll see his name in the owner. He dabbles a little bit. He found a pony. So it was some woman's riding horse, and we didn't know much about it, but the price was right. I think it was $1,000. So So we got him to Keeneland. I was stable at Keeneland. And we had a saddle. We put a saddle on him, a Western saddle. And, I mean, I didn't pay much attention to what was going on. You know, Max's wife was working for me as a hot walker because she's a teacher and she had the summers off. So he was in there saddling. And next thing I know, I hear it sounded like a bomb, man. And the horse is flipped over. He's kicking the wall. He just went nuts. Apparently the woman had been riding a horse bareback, so he wasn't used to having a saddle on.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that was Hop Brown, we used to call him. So I tried to make him a pony, you know. Tried. Had everybody riding him. Fast forward like 6-7 months, we're down at Gulfstream. And say, you know, I'm going to bring him to the track, but I'm going to wait till the last set, right before the track closes, when it's really quiet out there, and I can just kind of break him in and get him used to, you know, just get him out there, stand, and at the very least, I can sit on him and watch the horses go, and then maybe walk one off, you know, walk him on the track or off the track, and, you know, try to find some value for him. So I'm out there. And there's only like three horses out there. And this is the old Gulfstream before they redid it. And they had these giant kind of like bushes, pine bushes. And then it was a trainer stand right when you came on the track at the 3A's pole. And I had the horse, Hot Brown, standing there right at the gap. And I looked up, and on the trainer stand was Todd Pletcher. And it was just him and me. And he started making fun of my pony. You know, he's like,
jerk.
Yeah, who's that? Where'd you get that mangy thing? You know? So don't you know, the pony sits down like a camel.
Oh,
with me on him. Like, sits down like a camel. So I come off the back. And he just starts laughing. I said, if you say one word, I swear to God. And he couldn't help it because he was laughing. And I was so mad at that stupid horse. So I walked him off. I wasn't getting back on him now. So I walked him back to the barn. And some kid comes up and he grabs him. And he's like, what are you going to do with him? I said, I don't know. Give him away. He's like, what? I said, give him away. Well, give him the who? I said, I don't care. Just get him out of my sight. I'm sick.
Jerk.
I'm sick of looking at this horse, you know? So I wind up giving him to Jimmy Jerkins. Because Jimmy was a good rider. Jimmy played polo, and when he was younger, he was a good player. He might have been able to play, you know, professionally. I don't know that he'd have been like a high goal player, but he could have played, you know. So he's a good rider. I just gave him to Jimmy, and I was like, screw that. And funny thing was, when Mr. Ramsey and we split up, he asked me about the stupid pony. It was like 3 years later. Well, where's the pony? I said, I gave him away. What do you mean you gave him away? I said, he was unrideable. I gave him the Jimmy Jerkins like 3 years ago. Well, he was like, well, you know, we should recover some of the money from that. Blah, 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 blah. I said, Mr. Ramsey, you paid $1,000 for the horse 3 years ago. I said, if you want to give him a bill for that horse 3 years later, I'm sure he can give you a bill for his feed for the last 3 years that's going to be much higher than $1,000. So just let it go, man. And he did. And Jimmy rode him for a couple of years. And I don't did with him, but Hop Brown. It was crazy. That was when I first started training. And I had horses on Rice Road, which is on the other side there's a road that goes down the backside of Keeneland. It's on the other side. I'm pretty sure Godolphin owns that barn now. Back then, it was just kind of like a quarantine utility type barn that they wound up sticking us in for that summer.
There you go, Chuck.
And we claimed this horse named El Balazano. He was a 2-year-old, and we claimed him at Churchill. And he was by French Deputy. He was a pretty good horse, actually. He just wasn't wired. Like, his brain just wasn't wired that
He's nuts.
He was pretty nuts. He actually broke up the Hawthorne Gold Cup paddock.
so dope.
But a couple of days that we claimed him. Hal Steele was the trainer. I think pretty sure Hal Steele. So we claimed him, and he, like 2 days after we had him, he got loose, and there's a field like on the back of that training center that just goes forever. And we lost him, and man, we couldn't find him for like hours. We were going all over the place. You're like, shit, man, how am I going to call Mr. Ramsey and tell him we lost the horse? What do you mean you lost the horse? Yeah, we don't know where he is. we finally found him. And I never forget that we got him back, and he'd got into some kind of bush or something. He had like
poison ivy or something.
Nah, like stickers on him, you know. And I remember the guys were out in front of our barn, kind of like taking him off and you know, giving him a bath. And all of a sudden, across the street was Eric Reed's barn. And I really didn't know Eric until, you know, we moved in there. And all of a sudden, across the room, there was two grooms of Eric Reed's, and they were having like a jousting fight with pitchforks.
Oh, sweet.
And I remember saying to myself, man, this is not what I signed up to do, man. We claimed this horse for like $50,000 or $30,000. We freaking lost him for 2 hours. The next thing you know, there's jousting going on across the street. Sport of kings, man. We had some good time. Jay was there.
Oh, Jay, man. Bidas.
Jay's gonna. Things are looking good for Jay because Les Connell is picking up a lot of those mounts that Jose Ortiz was riding for Linda Rice.
Yeah, he's balling.
He did a good job riding that horse in the what's the Philly version of the wood?
Gazelle?
The gazelle.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Winning on the maiden.
Yes. Oh, I
like that. That was a horse I really liked. And
yeah.
I was like, you know.
Very well meant.
I'm just betting this horse to win. Remember, I texted you. I said, why are they betting the four coming out of Turfway? That doesn't make any sense.
Right. That's the same thing. I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, that horse hadn't run great. It hadn't run fast. It had running on a non dirt surface, and he was like 6-5. I didn't get that at all. So I just bet that horse to win. Was happy to get the $7.
Yeah, the 5-2 was good.
But now Jay's he's gonna do good. That's kind of what's gonna do good with Jose Ortiz going to Kentucky. I noticed that. Jose Ortiz is riding for
some Kentucky outfits.
Oh, yeah. Cox is riding them now. So, Frenchie's going to be on the outs. Who rode Cox's winner yesterday in the stake, the Beaumont? The other Frenchie, Pratt. Denims and Pearls.
All world.
It looked like yesterday.
Mm-hmm. You know, the track at Keeneland, it seems like it's like deep or something. They look like they were running on record player.
Yeah. I mean, the times seemed like they were fair. I know it was cold, you know, that's part of it too.
Yeah, maybe. Even on the turf, they didn't look like they were really kind of.
You know, it had rained earlier in the week. They're pretty good. So that turf did have a little bit of give to it. And, you know, turf, when it's got a little bit of give to it, it just seems like it's much more fair. It just plays fair. It was nice to have Keeneland back, though.
Yeah. It's usually right, you know, it's in a great spot. But I do always find it interesting after this first weekend what it kind of looks like. Just notoriously, it kind of, the quality drops a little bit because people are kind of getting ready for a derby weekend and such. And Indiana Grand Open today, too.
Should we do a derby show?
Yeah, why not? Did we last year or no?
I can't remember.
I think we did. And that's the only one we did. We did derby and Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I think that's it. Well, the derby card and the Breeders' Cup card, there's enough.
Prime time.
Yeah.
It's prime time.
Right. There's enough good races and horses that everybody follows and just not, you know. Like, what about the kid that won the two-year-old race yesterday, the jock?
Oh, yeah.
He's won two races at Keeneland. He's been 75-1 both times. I got a two-year-old race on Wednesday. It is weird how the two-year-old races have become, at Keeneland, have become Wesley Ward versus
the world
versus the Gyps. Guy's got all these $6,000 horse yearlings, and Wesley's always got like this eclectic group. There's a, like one by Hootenanny who he
bred himself.
Right, he bred. The next thing you know, he's got a $600,000 horse by Curlin and Earl of a, like, remember the one year he had the Kitten's Joy?
Yes.
It just opened up 10. I said, how in the hell can you get a Kitten's Joy to run in April of their two-year-old year on the dirt? Like, it just doesn't seem possible sometimes. But, yes, they often disappear. It's a very strange dynamic, because when I first came around Kentucky, there was a lot of bigger outfits. Dogwood used to.
Yeah, I remember Dogwood used to, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, they'd prime them in the Aiken trials, and then they'd bring them, they'd send them right up. But there was a lot of horses that used to, you know, bigger outfits, and it's just kind of fallen off now. And somebody was on a Twitter, was like, I don't understand why all these people. What do you mean you don't understand? They're running for $80,000. If you can go buy a horse in September, October for $3,000, and you get him in a race in April for $80, and you hit the board, well, you know what? You're doing good. You're way ahead of the game. And if the horse turns out to be like a Belterra horse, well, at least you had a chance to take a swing at an $80,000 purse. I mean, it's obvious what guys do. They buy cheaper horses. They try to get them ready early, and it's a 4.5-furlong raise. If you break sharp, you have some speed, you might get lucky. It's not, you know, you don't even have to win. If you run third, you get $8,000. You know, you get your money back for the horse. God forbid you get one that can actually run a little bit and you sell them. John Hancock sold that one filly last year for good money.
For good money, yeah.
Yeah, like good money. Like buy a house money. Not, you wouldn't be buying John Calipari's house, but.
No, not that crib.
Didn't see that coming.
No, that was a curve.
I saw reports that he was talking to Arkansas, and I was.
Why?
Yeah, that's what I was like, this sounds made up. This doesn't sound real. The next thing you know, bang, it was real. It's actually probably a good thing for everybody, for all parties.
It really is, because I think he got this reputation from just, like you were saying it this weekend, from being at Kentucky boosted a lot of his recruiting when he really wasn't all that great.
I mean,
at least not at Memphis. He was okay, I guess, at UMass when he was there, but.
Listen, he at UMass, he got, he had Marcus Camby.
Mm-hmm.
People forget how good of a player Marcus Camby
was. Oh, he was ridiculous.
He was in the pros. He played for like 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, at Memphis, he had Derrick Rose, who, again, nice. People kind of discount now because they just saw the after-injury Derrick Rose. But, listen, Calipari is the epitome of the guy that got the big contract and just
stopped.
It's kind of, I'm trying to think of the word, but not ironic. I think it's funny that I've been arguing with these Kentucky people for like 4 years over this. And all the stuff that they told me I was an asshole and I didn't know what I was talking about. Now they're saying the exact same things that he was telling me.
Like, where were you then? Years ago. I was saying this.
Right. And now they're all saying, oh, you know. It's like, man, that guy used to come up with defensive schemes. And I go, he's doing the same crap he did 15 years ago. Like, everything changed.
Right, the whole
then afterwards, he admitted that he doesn't scout the other teams. I'm thinking to myself, like,
why would you do that?
Like, well, A, why wouldn't you do that? And B, why would you admit that you don't do that? And it just was a case of you give a guy a huge contract, and he's already kind of got to the pinnacle, right? He won his title. He's had all these Coach of the Year awards. You know, when they show him in his office and he's got 50 basketballs, he's got, you know, can call all these, you know, great Hall of Fame kind of, he's got LeBron's number on his, you know, Rolodex. Is that the type of guy that's going to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out, a scheme to beat Alabama? No.
Not unless it's Tibbs.
Oh, right. When that guy's an insane person.
Exactly.
But he also hasn't won, you know, Calipari. Listen, having one championship for the quality of coaches, quality of players he's had for a long time is not a good thing. But he has won it, and he has won, you know, he's got the laurels.
Yeah. No, that's true.
But he's just, it's obvious that he got coached a lot. And now we know why.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things about basketball that people just have no idea. They just don't
understand. They miss.
They watch the game and just have no idea what's going on. But just as, you know what? Arkansas gets a big name guy, which is something that they probably covet. They're going to get recruits. He's going to get guys to go there. It's not like they're not going to go there. He's going to get guys. He may not get the same quality of guys he got at Kentucky, but
you're going to be close.
But it, you know, he's going to get players there.
Yep.
It just is a matter of you know, what kind of staff is he going to have, and is he going to just do a better damn job of coaching the team, because he's good at everything else, but the coaching has been the problem. You know, Kentucky was sick of him, and the people were sick of him, and the boosters were sick of him. And
it was just time.
Unless they just came out next year and blitzed through the schedule and...
Yeah, went undefeated or something. And
every time it was going to be a tough loss.
It was just going to get worse.
Yep. And if they started out bad, and it was... And listen, that it doesn't matter how much money you have or how much you've won. It's gotta be tough when everyone's against you.
Me against the world, like Tupac.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's not a young up and coming guy anymore. He has nothing to. I'm sure in his mind, he has nothing to prove.
What would he?
He's in the Hall of Fame. He's got three Coach of the Year titles. He's got a championship. He's got a bunch of, you know, accolades. So I'm sure he says, like, you know, what do people want? So going somewhere where you want it, it matters. It's like why people just remember we had this conversation about jockeys.
Oh yeah,
and you know, people say these terrible things, and it shows the quality of person that they are. But people think because professional athletes make a lot of money that they're not people. They're still people. And just because you make a lot of money doesn't mean that you don't feel the pressure to succeed, and you don't hear the people when you don't. And that doesn't mean that, you know what, you pay your money, you go there and you can boo somebody. But it also is, it's just human nature. People don't want to be hated. There's the people like Kobe and these intense competitor people who like use it to, they thrive off it. You know, like Jordan would try to find a slight, even if it was kind of like in his head, to use as motivation.
Right, made it up.
Right. But there are very few people like that. Most people, they don't want to be abused.
Ask Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, he's fighting with a guy with a
freaking balloon on his head.
How could a grown man go to an NBA basketball game with a balloon hat? What is wrong with that guy?
I don't know. I don't know which one is worse.
Yeah, Russ is just kind of...
He's had enough. He's clearly had enough.
I don't know how we got off into social commentary.
Hey, NBA will do that to you, man.
Listen, man, John Calipari in UK basketball is part of horse racing.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know who they're going to get the coach there, but whoever it is, it's...
As long as it's not Roy Williams, they're probably going to be okay.
Roy's done.
I know.
He's old.
Thankfully.
Unless the mayor would, like, freak out.
Oh, man. I would go into shock.
I don't know. I don't know. I think
Richard Pitino.
Shit, he couldn't even get the Louisville job. It would be funny if they brought Rick Pitino back. It's not going to happen.
No way.
But it would be funny. He is one of the few people that could handle it.
He definitely could handle it. That's
you don't. Sure. He does not care.
He doesn't. He can't want that at this point in his life.
Oh, I'm sure. I guarantee you he'd go back.
I mean, he's had enough of where he's at now.
Are you kidding me? He'd be back there in a second. It would be that's he would live for that, to come back and be able to, if he could win another championship there, he'd be like the conquering king.
The key to the state of Kentucky.
I trained for him, and I mean, I'm not saying I really know him very well, but ego is a huge part of that guy's life, man.
Gotta be.
Winning is obsessive. He's the guy, kind of guy that
the Tibbs mode. Harry, he's on Tibbs mode.
He is gonna be, you know, trying to find, you know, some tiny hole in the system to exploit. I mean, he won.
Aren't they of the same ilk anyway?
He won a title at yeah, I think Tibbs worked for him.
Yeah, I was gonna say Tibbs worked under him. So that makes a lot of sense. He won a title at
Louisville with basically no good players. Russ Smith was his best player.
Russ Smith. That guy.
He won a title with that.
Well, at least most of it, right? Didn't he get hurt in the title game? Like, ruin his knee? Like, exploded?
That was a
different... Or am I thinking of the wrong guy?
Yeah, you're thinking of a different guy. Yeah, the one guy's leg snapped.
Yeah, that's the one that sticks out in my head.
It broke its sesamoid. Thankfully, we don't just put people down.
No, never. Depends. What they did and what day it was.
Yeah. So, I think the Oaks is going to be an interesting race.
Should be. I mean, it usually is. I mean, you know, except for when there's like a Pletcher monster.
Well, the Intimista filly. It's funny because I sort of liked her in that race, but as it turns out, it didn't go nearly the way I thought it was going to go. The end result was a good one, but I really thought that she'd be on the lead. I thought he'd try to put her back on the lead because she had run so well without dirt hitting her in the face, but she just kind of got outrun to the first turn and
settled.
And then she settled. And the race at Gulfstream, she never looked like a winner. She always looked like she was having to do a lot to keep up. And in the race in the Ashland the other day, I mean, she looked like a winner on the turn. The whole
she was loaded.
It was almost like, how much is she going to win by? But that was it was funny. And you know, it goes back to the point we were making earlier, and that these horses are so lightly raced that we don't really know as much about them as we think we do because we just haven't seen them very much.
Never see them.
I mean, and circumstances dictate so much in a race. And when we don't see horses run, or they only race a couple times, or they have a situation where the race sets up well for them, we don't really have an idea of what these horses are because we haven't seen very much of them. And in a lot of cases, the ones that have been successful, it's because the race is set up well. And that's not a knock on a horse, but you know, it's not like every horse has got to overcome the world in order for us to say, oh, well, that's a good horse. Some horses make their own race. Like we talked about earlier, that's the problem with deep closers, is that they don't dictate their own race. The race is dictated to them. Can they overcome?
Right. Pace and traffic. I mean, yes, those are the two things that will ruin a closer. And that's two things rather than maybe one.
Exactly. You know, so it's not a criticism of the horse. It's just that we don't know. We know so little about so many of these horses that it's just, you know, I mean, I 2 weeks ago, did you think Timberlake wasn't going to get a mile and a quarter? I mean, did you say to yourself, oh, he's definitely not getting a mile and a quarter? I mean, I didn't. I thought that, I mean, most of these horses aren't really bred to go a mile and a quarter, but he was a horse that had always kind of finished well in his race.
Strong, yeah.
You know, and he looked like he had the you know, he's by Into Mischief, so it's always a little bit of a question mark, but he's done so well Into Mischief that all of a sudden he's off the Derby track.
Right.
I don't think he's not even
talked about. Like, right. Timber, what? Who?
Yeah, it's just how these things go. And it's just, you know, we know so little about them. We haven't seen them That's the one thing about fierceness that we actually have seen. We have seen him in situations that he just has been unable to overcome.
Twice.
I mean, it's such a odd type of horse in that you don't usually see these all or nothing type horses at this level. You see a lot of that at the lower level where
Right,
horses,
where we're not
yeah,
consistent, you know.
you'll see a horse that gets the lead and win to get brave on the lead, and then the next race someone will challenge them and they'll just stop and get beat 10
Stop. Yep.
lengths. But at the higher levels, usually the horses are more consistent. You just don't see this all or nothing that he gives you. He does. He gives you all or nothing. And here we are, like a week away, and everybody's forgotten about the Japanese horse, who just happens to be undefeated, and he is also bred to go the distance. It's just not a minor thing. Does he have a long road, literally and figuratively? Yes.
Yeah.
But if you were going to ever have a horse like that win it, this seems like the year.
Yeah, I'm down with that because there's a lot of people out there that are just under strict belief that a Japanese horse winning is impossible.
Yeah, because it's never happened before. But
Right. Until it
honestly,
happens, they're going to be.
how many horses have come in with his resume? And how many horses have come in with a resume similar to that are facing a field like this? It's just not a great
Zero.
group.
Right. It's unique. So.
Yeah. If Clement had run that panda gate in the wood,
Probably would have won.
he might have won. He might have hit the board, but he would have been a lot closer to the winner in that race. Well, of course, this is a conjecture, but than he was to Forever Young. I mean, that's their measuring stick. He's about 8 to 10 lengths better than Panda Gate. Panda Gate, not a bad horse. So that's kind of where I got him. Does it mean I'll bet on him? No, that doesn't mean that. Price has got to be right. If that horse is sitting there at 6 to 1, he's just not a play. Because he does have to overcome
Right, he
all the
has
things.
those
I
things
mean,
against him. 6 to 1 is
yeah.
short.
It's a lot of travel. The horse left Japan a long time ago. And he went to Saudi Arabia, then he went to Dubai, now he's coming to Kentucky. That's a lot of shipping for a young horse. It's a lot of shipping for any horse. And this kind of revelation, even with those horses, I mean, you get this revelation that he doesn't like dirt in his face, and they're wearing a no cup hood. He had that thing
Yeah.
that they wore last time. And I mean, is the Kentucky Derby a race that if you have a non-speed horse, you want to give up well, we can't take dirt, like. That's an issue. To me, that's as big of an issue as
Huge
any.
issue.
Yeah. If he's gonna be like Julius Shindig and
Stop. Put the brakes on.
not gonna take the dirt in her face, that's a problem because man, there's 19 others. The odds of you coming out unscathed dirt wise is low.
Zero,
And then you
almost.
got the other Japanese horse who we know almost nothing about. Hopefully the weather's good.
Yeah, I don't like the monsoon ones.
Oh, sir. Anything else? Strike your
No.
sniper agenda this weekend.
No. Went to the Bulls game yesterday. Magic versus Bulls. It was pretty good.
playoff Magic.
Yeah, Magic almost coughed that one up, and Friends got a little banged up. I think he sprained his ankle.
You don't want to see that at this time of year.
No, yeah, it was real quiet in there.
Yeah.
He was rolling around for a little bit, and I thought he was going to get up. And then this was like midway through the third, and then, you know, he didn't come back. So, and he's listed early injury report as questionable for tomorrow.
I think seems like half the league is
they play questionable. The Rockets, huh?
It seems like half the league is questionable this week.
Yeah, or not playing, like, yeah. Lauri Markkanen and
yeah, right.
Clarkson. Like, the Utah Jazz just packed it up, man.
They're like 3-26 in their last 29.
Yeah, games. they just we're done here.
Yeah.
Last third of the season, you can count us out.
Yeah. We'll see you next year.
Because we're not going to show up.
Yeah, you get to see we got a couple more games up. You'll see our G League team, and we'll see you guys next year.
All right. It's been good. You guys were great. Yeah. Good job.
Well, maybe Tommy Albertani can get a job working for the Jets since he's retired. Hanging it up, Mr. Albertani. Yeah.
I did not see that.
Yes, he's retired.
Oh, boy.
His last runner was the Philly the other day in the stake at Keeneland, the sprinter. Yeah, he's had enough. I don't blame him. Shit, I did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, true. Very true.
Well, apparently he's done good with his money, and he had those Bernardini breeding seasons every year, I'm sure, since he trained him.
Got a couple milli.
That's always, it's always nice.
Nice nest egg.
Yeah. So that he just didn't have that many horses, and it's kind of sick of it. I can relate, man.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate. Just you look down the shed row, and the ones looking back at you aren't much faster than you are.
It's a problem.
It's a big problem. And you know, Tommy's done really good, and he's had some good horses over the years, so. You know, when you train for an outfit like Godolphin and then you don't train for him anymore, it's pretty tough. Even their third string horses are still decent. Good. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Game start yet?
I think the game's at halftime.
Is it already? I thought they started at like 9:30.
The game is a halftime. It's a barn burner, 36-30.
Ooh, UConn. They're burning the Nets up.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, two big players. They're both 7-foot goons. Kind of like a flashback to the old days.
I know, right? When there were big guys that did big guy things. Now everybody's homogenous skill wise.
Yeah. Yep. Well, the NBA playoffs start next week, so at least we'll have that.
Yep. Unfortunately, the Magic gonna play the Knicks.
It's funny though how like college basketball ends abruptly, and then you know the NBA regular season ends.
Yeah.
And baseball's still kind of, you know, it's early. The guy for the Astros, man, he threw a no-hitter. He's a 30-year-old rookie. He threw a no-hitter his first game of the year. Last night, he got into the sixth inning without giving up a hit.
Oof. Smoke.
He got 44 major league batters out before he got one, before he gave up a hit this year.
That's tough.
It's all downhill from here.
Right. Yeah, I know. Now I got to tee off on him.
That's just unbelievable, though, man. 44 guys. He had 44 outs before he gave up a hit. And the hit was a little bleeder, too. It was not a towering shot. It was just a little, you know. If they allowed him to do the shift, you know, they don't let him shift anymore. If they still let him do it, it probably would have
probably
been right
got that
guy.
One too.
That's exactly where the guy used to stand, because that's, you know, where you hit the ball. I thought that was interesting. Took the guy forever to make it, and then now he's like,
he's striking out everybody.
He turned into Pedro. Yeah, baseball early in the season is, I tell you, I like rough, baseball bro. As a afternoon background noise.
Yep. It's, on a Saturday it's very, afternoon.
It's good for background noise, because it's not, you know, it's deliberate and it's slow, and every once in a while you hear the crack of the bat, but, and you don't have to pay that much attention to it, you know?
No, and
you
don't
can just
miss
look
anything,
up once in a while and right, you don't miss that much.
And then they'll show a replay of whatever you might have missed as far as balls and strikes and close plays or anything like that.
Right.
There's enough time. Game. You know, there's enough time between plays.
Right. That's why I love spring training. It's great because
I
got games on every
slow.
Day.
Yeah.
I just turn it on and it's like the, you know, whatever I'm doing, it's just in the background. Because I'm easily distracted. If I put races on the background, I start looking.
Start cussing.
Oh, I start looking at the stupid PPs. Next thing you know, I'm betting. Betting Mahoning Valley, land of the mud.
I don't know who's muddier, Oakland or MVR.
It's a mud off. I see some crooked politicians are trying to kill Canterbury.
Yeah.
I hate politicians. I really don't like them as people. Like, if you want to be a politician, there's something wrong with you.
It's a terrible gig, man.
This time, in this 2024, you're just, there's just
asking
something wrong.
For nonsense is just a terrible gig.
No, just crooks.
Yeah. Among other things.
They all
they dabble in it all.
They all wind up somehow making, you know, their net worth explode.
Ridiculous.
While they're making a, you know, relatively modest fee.
Lobbies, man.
Somehow they wind up with tons of money in their account.
The lobby.
Just sick of politicians.
I'm with you.
They're all fake. We have two maniacs trying to be president.
Old ones at that.
Old, right. What a country, man. Anyway, I don't really have anything else to say about anything.
Me either. We're good.
I can't think of anything else. Well, shout out to Bruno, man.
Oh, yeah, Bo Cruz.
Looked like a winner every step.
Yeah, was not losing. See, broke
it's great,
well, it was over.
It's such a great play, though. Like, horses that have been racing longer, showing speed, cutting back to 7A's.
Hooking a field that was rather slow.
Was not a great field.
Right.
This is a pretty horrible group of sprinters this year.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Andy Sterling kind of floated out, maybe racing Alva Starr in the Vanderbilt, which is a long ways from now, but I guess, you know, she would get weight. I think it's, is it a handicap? I think it's still a handicap. So
yeah,
she would get weight, and I don't know who you'd be real terribly afraid of.
True.
Philly sprinters have always good.
Yeah, they've been okay. They're very competitive. You know, yeah, extra heat is my favorite.
Yeah.
She's a beast.
But it's an interesting thought, but it ain't going to happen.
Right. I wouldn't think.
though the trainer is the owner, so, and a breeder, Brett Brinkman. That mare is produced. I think that horse is a half to that other filly sprinter. No, I guess it's the club car.
Oh, okay. Pretty good.
So Jenny Wiley's this weekend. We got another Chuck Appleby tipper. Except this time, Mr. Buick is in town.
Yeah, see, big difference.
Yeah, when he goes to the bullpen for Mr.
When
Mr.
Billy B. Buick, comes to town.
Yeah, different story. Listed at 9-2 morning line. Yeah, have a feeling
it's going to be 8-5.
Yes, have a tops. Feeling that number is, like many of the morning lines, not going to last. Especially if there's a little give in the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Because the rain. We got some rain.
Look like Order of Australia out there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we should end it on that note.
Still can't believe I screwed that up. What a mess. Order of Australia, the pandemic days.
Oh, man, that was gross.
Oh, man. Well, it's been real.
Yes, indeed.
Hope the week goes well for everyone. And, well, oh, shout out to Joe K.
Joey to K, beating up on Danny.
Yes. Yes, dude. In our NBA fantasy league, I choked last week, and Joe Kristofek's brother beat me by 2 rebounds, and I was seemingly destined to be tied for the league title with Danny, and then swoops in this week and upsets him. His brother Joe. So, shout out to Joe Kristofek, the NBA spoiler, the NBA fantasy spoiler,
the transaction king.
I just have to like have my team hold on this week. We play a team that stinks. Guy's got like a hospital ward over there. I went to his. I went down his roster the other day. The red O's are all over the place.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, so we just got to ease through it and win the title.
Right.
Grab then the nobody. Then nobody's got to hear about it anymore.
Exactly.
We went from worst to first.
Not easy.
Well, provided we don't screw it up this week.
Nah, you're good.
So, no games tonight. So
that helps.
Don't have to. No pressure. No pressure. All right. Well, we'll talk next week. Thank you for listening.
See you.